And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I'm your host, Mark Gillar. What a special show we have lined up today. In the second half of the hour, we're going to be talking with Peter Schweitzer. He's the author of a book called Throw Them All Out. It's a book that has tongues wagging all over Washington and America about insider trading by members of Congress. But first, a very, very special guest, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, is here today. You'll know Michelle Bachmann as the founder of the Tea Party Caucus in Congress, and despite the mainstream media's best effort to keep it a secret, Michelle Bachmann is also running for President of the United States. She's here today to talk to us about her candidacy, as well as her new book, Core of Conviction. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Mark, it's a thrill to be with you on TeaPartyHour.com. Thanks for having me on today. I look forward to this.
Oh, I've been looking forward to having you on for a long time, and I don't think I have to tell you, you're a big hit with the Tea Partiers. Many of them hold you out as being the only true conservative in the race. Do you think that's an exaggeration?
No, I don't at all. I think it's absolutely true. We have our website, which is michellebachmann.com, but we also have nosurprises2012.com. And I think that's where we see a lot of people who are being chameleons, and who are coming late to the party. They want you to think that they are Tea Partiers, but the fact is, these are people that have voted for TARP, the $700 billion bailout. These are people who've been for the individual health care mandate in Obamacare. These are people who've been for the whole global warming initiatives. On issue after issue after issue, even being against right-to-work states, I am the only candidate that has stood strong. I am consistent. I have a clean record on every policy issue that there is in front of the Tea Party. And so I think it's really important that people know who is the real constitutional conservative in this race and who isn't.
Well, you know, before we get to Barack Obama, you're going to have to get past the primaries. So I'd like to take some of the other primary candidates one at a time and have you tell us why you should be the conservative's choice over them. I'm going to skip Mitt Romney because it's only a 15-minute segment, and, you know, I don't know that we could get it done in that much time. But let's talk about Newt Gingrich. Why should you be the conservative's choice over Newt?
Well, again, I'm not saying anything to trash the candidates. These are decent people, and I want to make that very clear. But I also think, just to be factual, the person who came up with the idea of requiring every American, as a condition of just being a citizen, to force you to buy health insurance whether you want to or not, that was Newt Gingrich's idea, and he's been pushing it.
You're saying he's the grandfather of Obamacare?
Well, he admitted it himself on stage that he was, that idea came from him, and that he was pushing that through the Heritage Foundation. And also he and his organization have taken $37 million from healthcare companies to push a lot of these initiatives that actually ended up going into Obamacare. Our nominee can't be anyone who is involved in the healthcare movement in Washington to have the federal government take over healthcare. And also, in 2006, Newt Gingrich took, I think it was between $1.6 and $1.8 million from Fannie and Freddie, and that's been well documented lately, to act as a surrogate on their behalf with senior Republicans. In other words, to influence them to keep the party going with Fannie and Freddie. Fannie and Freddie were the epicenter of this financial mortgage meltdown. I was in Washington, D.C., fighting against Fannie and Freddie while Newt Gingrich was taking $1.6 to $1.8 million to act on their behalf. He's been the consummate Washington, D.C. insider, and whether it's sitting on the couch with Nancy Pelosi to say that the federal government has to get involved with dealing with global warming, or whether it was he was also for the TARP bailout. So on issue after issue after issue, he's been on the wrong side, including, a lot of people don't know, he was one of the very few people that voted to create the Department of Education under Jimmy Carter. So when he was in Washington, D.C., he voted to start the federal Department of Education. I'm the person who's been saying longer than anyone we have to get rid of the federal Department of Education. And I led a movement in Minnesota to throw out the federal government standards. In our state, we were the only state that won.
How much money are we wasting on the Department of Education each year, Congresswoman Bachman?
Literally billions of dollars. The average salary in Washington, D.C. for a bureaucrat is $123,000 a year. And we have well over 4,200 bureaucrats. But that isn't the extent of it. They also put requirements and mandates on all of the schools. And they promote the curriculum, the dumbed-down, politically correct curriculum that is being force-fed on our kids across America. As far as I'm concerned, it's curriculum that tears down the United States. It doesn't lift up the United States. And I'm very serious when I talk about shutting down this department. I mean it. Of all of the candidates that are up there, I am the one that you can count on to make sure that the Department of Education will be gone. I have a proven track record because as a mom, I had our 5 biological kids, but I also raised 23 foster children with my husband. And I led the movement in Minnesota to throw out these standards in a very unusual state, a highly Democrat state. But people really care about their kids. They didn't want political correctness. I got involved, and I made sure it happened. And as President of the United States, you can know I've got the tenaciousness to make it happen.
How would you differentiate yourself from Rick Perry?
Well, I think probably there's a few things. Number one, it would be immigration. There's a very big difference on immigration. I will build that fence. Governor Perry won't build the fence. I don't believe in taxpayer-subsidized benefits for illegal aliens. He defends the taxpayer-subsidized benefits for illegal aliens and for their children. I will also do what none of the other candidates will do. I will end the practice of anchor babies in the United States. That's where an illegal alien woman comes into the United States, gives birth to a child, and the child is granted automatic American citizenship status. We don't have to do that. Other countries don't do that. We can pass legislation that says if your parents are illegal aliens, you don't get the status of being an American citizen. And the reason why that's important is because once that baby has American citizenship status, they immediately begin receiving thousands and thousands of dollars worth of welfare benefits. Well, we can't afford that. We can't afford to have the most powerful magnet that there is, anchor babies, to import more welfare into the country. We can't do that.
We have a country that was built on immigration, but it was legal immigration.
That's right.
How much money would you say illegal immigration is costing us each year in the United States?
It costs us an astounding $113 billion a year, and $82 billion of that amount is borne by the state and local governments. That's your property taxes. That's your local state taxes. It costs every household in this country, Mark, $1,000. So for your listeners that are listening right now, you'd have an extra $1,000 in your pocket every year, but for illegal immigration. I'm going to stop that process. And also with Governor Perry, one of the big problems that he has is crony capitalism. In his own state, he's been on the receiving end of multiple millions of dollars from donors. And in return, he has granted special status and grant money and tax exemptions and breaks and political favors to people. That's Barack Obama's problem. We can't have a nominee that has a problem with crony capitalism. And that's one thing you won't find with me or in my background or in my record.
That's pretty much politics as usual at a time when many Americans want true change, not the type we got in the last election. Now, Rick Santorum seems like a pretty conservative guy, very pro-life. How do you see Rick as not being as conservative as you?
Well, he is. He's a decent guy and a family man. And, again, I'm not here to trash anyone, but just to give the factual differences. And I think the biggest difference there is in the fact that Rick Santorum has voted against right-to-work legislation. There are 22 states in the United States that are right-to-work states. Iowa is one. South Carolina is one. That means that somebody can work and not be in a union. They aren't compelled to join a union. That's a big issue in the United States right now with unions. And Rick Santorum sided with the unions, and he voted against national right-to-work legislation when he had a chance to support it. I believe in right-to-work laws. I will support a national right-to-work law because I think that it's every American's right under the freedom and liberty that we have to be able to have a job and not be forced and compelled to join a union.
Well, speaking of unions, I'd like to play a little clip that Barack Obama said in front of the SEIU in Ohio. I know you've been very critical of the stimulus packages and whether or not it's working. I'd like your comments on President Obama's statement to the union.
An unprecedented recovery act. And we did it without the usual Washington earmarks and pork barrel spending. And Ohio, it is working.
Your opinion of that particular statement?
That's crony capitalism, and it's worse. It's taking our tax money that we don't even have enough. We're going into debtor's prison, and instead he's transferring that money to politically pay off the unions. They're the ones who come out and force and volunteer to get the president elected. And I'll tell you something else. Yesterday, I was on a morning show here in New York City because my new book just came out, Core of Conviction. And I was promoting the book, and one of the hands came up to me. He was a stagehand, and he said, "I want you to know I support you." And he said, "I belong to the local union, Local One." And he said, "We were at our union, and they said that they were going to vote to get $5,000 to Occupy Wall Street out of the union." He didn't want to give them the money, but he said it didn't matter. The higher-ups, the honchos, wanted to do it. Well, isn't it interesting that President Obama came out? He won't identify with the Tea Party, but he identifies with Occupy Wall Street, and yet it's the unions that are sending money to support Occupy Wall Street. This is one continuous line from the White House right down to Occupy Wall Street, and we need to call it out for what it is.
Well, what's interesting is that when we launched the Tea Party, there were so many criticisms saying the Tea Party was violent, the Tea Party was dangerous. People considered us a potential threat for domestic terrorism, yet we see actual violence at the Occupy movements. We've got some that are so dangerous they have to have a special tent for women who've been sexually molested, and yet no one on the left will call out the violence that we see at these particular demonstrations, yet they continue to compare it to the Tea Party. Do you see any comparison with the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street?
If the difference between East and West, day and night, they're 180 degrees different. The Tea Party wants less taxes, less government. They want the government to follow the Constitution. Occupy Wall Street doesn't want the Constitution. Their bottom line is they want productive people to pay for their stuff. I mean, that's it. When it comes down to it, they don't want to pay for their own life. They want everyone else to pay for it, but they're anarchists. They want to tear down the country, and there have been sexual assaults, terrible drug use, violence, even including death, where people have been murdered at these events. And so I don't think that we should baby these people. These are thugs, and they're a blight on society, and it's time that we call them out for who they are.
I have a question for you. I listened to your teleconference yesterday evening. I was very impressed. And one of the things you said is that we need to get rid of the weak sisters in Washington. We need someone with a titanium spine, or you said that you have a titanium spine. I want to ask you about something that's kind of been like kryptonite to some of the presidential candidates and that they avoid it. When Barack Obama released his birth certificate, many, many experts across the country came forward and said that it had electrical or computer anomalies in it. In fact, we've got Sheriff Arpaio in Arizona investigating it right now. And Donald Trump, when he was on your last teleconference, said that someone still needs to be analyzing that. Do you agree with Sheriff Arpaio and Mr. Trump that that does need to be verified? I mean, we can't just take his word for it because he released a file that it's legit.
Well, I was with Donald Trump yesterday, as a matter of fact. I'm in New York City promoting my new book, Core of Conviction. I met with Donald Trump. He's a good friend, and we have a great relationship. And he brought up this issue again to me and said that he truly believes that Barack Obama needs to answer for what's going on in the certificate, and he felt very strongly about it.
And how does Michelle Bachmann feel about it?
It wasn't an issue that I was focusing on when I was in D.C. I just think that I have no problem showing my birth certificate. It's legitimate. It can be, mine can be tested. It can be, do whatever you want to do, because you'll find out that I'm legitimate. I think what President Obama has stood for is one anti-American value after another. That's what's killing our country. And he simply cannot be reelected, because I think we will see a certainty of economic collapse, and I think that we will see potential threats against the United States unlike anything we have ever witnessed in the history of the country. It is that serious, and that's why I'm putting my candidacy up for the American people.
Mike, we talk about some of the things that scare us as conservatives if he gets reelected. I want to play a very short clip of President Obama when he was still a candidate making a comment about one of the things he'd like to see come into existence.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well funded.
I mean, first of all, the military budget is pretty high. The idea that we need to duplicate that and spend just as much money on a civilian peacekeeping force seems kind of bizarre. I'm sure you've heard this quote before. What ran through your mind when you heard it for the first time?
Well, two things. I heard it at the time when the president gave that, and it raised the hair on the back of my neck. I thought it was a frightening thing to hear a president say. I don't even know if he understood what he was saying. Maybe he did. If he did, that's even more frightening. But I didn't know which to think was worse, all the people who are applauding in the background or the remarks or the remarks from the president. We don't need to have a big army here in the United States to keep the American people in line. What we need is to keep the government in line. And that's what we haven't seen. The president has gone beyond all constitutional bounds and limitations. And he's issuing one executive order after another, abusing his power as president of the United States. We need to be very concerned. But people need to call out the president. That's why I'm glad, Mark, for your show. You're calling him out. You're telling the people the truth about what's going on. We are at a terrible time. The country is coming apart at the seams right now. And the president continues to foment this discontent. And rather than dealing with the problem, rather than trying to deal with the debt and the national security threat, he's adding to it. He keeps throwing gas on the flames. I look at this in absolute disbelief. People are suffering every day. You think for the good of the country, he'd get off his campaign bus, get off the golf course, and do something for once. Actually, do something. It's shameful what this president's doing.
Do you think it's a coincidence that he happened to be out of the country while some of the Democrat mayors had to deal with Occupy Wall Street in slightly rougher ways than perhaps Obama would have liked?
You know, I think that there's nothing beyond this president. I think that the party's over. And again, it's infantile the way that he continually blames everyone else when he refuses to even show up for work.
Well, that's certainly a good summary of it. Now, I want to make sure that everybody out there knows how to do three things, Congresswoman Bachmann. I want to make sure they know how to contribute to your campaign. I want to make sure they know how to buy your book, including an autographed copy. And I also want to make sure that if perhaps they'd just like to volunteer and give some time, that they know how to do that as well. Could you tell my listeners how to do all three of those things?
Absolutely. The best way to do that is go to michellebachmann.com. Michelle with one L. Bachmann with two N's, michellebachmann.com. There you can press the button on donate, and you can hit the donate page. You can also buy a signed copy of my new book at michellebachmann.com. It's Michelle Bachmann, Core of Conviction, and I tell my life story and the motivation that I have for running for president. It's really a personal story. And then the third way is being able to volunteer. You can either come directly to the early primary states and volunteer, or you can volunteer from the convenience of your home whenever you'd like to, free of charge. You can be making phone calls to help get out the vote and get more volunteers, especially in the early primary state of Iowa, South Carolina. But we need you. We don't need you next year. We need you now. So please, I'm encouraging your listeners, go to michellebachman.com, sign up to be in a virtual phone bank. You can do it from home, and we would absolutely love your help, because this is the last exit ramp for our country, this 2012 election. I'm not kidding. This is it. We have one chance to get rid of Obamacare. No other candidate in this race has done more to get rid of Obamacare. I'm the only one committed to doing it. And if we want any chance to take this country back, I'm your choice as a true Tea Party candidate. So go to michellebachman.com. Help us, won't you, with donations and volunteering, and we can turn this country around.
Fantastic. Thank you for being here today. I've enjoyed your visit, and hopefully I'll have you back someday as President Bachman.
I would be honored and delighted. Thank you, everyone. You can all make it happen. So thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be right back with Peter Schweitzer right after this very important message.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
Winter storms will be here before you know it. Don't let your family get caught without power in the freezing cold. If you'd like to learn more about how you can have a solar-powered electrical generator for your home, go to teapartypowerhour.com and look for the picture of the solar-powered generator. While you're visiting teapartypowerhour.com, you'll also see ads for things like solar ovens, water purifiers, and many other items that can help your family in the event of a power outage or an economic meltdown. My next guest is Peter Schweitzer. He is the author of The Makers and the Takers, Architects of Ruin, and one of my favorite books of all time, Do As I Say, Not As I Do, Profiles in Liberal Hypocrisy. He's here today to talk to us about his latest book, Throw Them All Out, How Politicians and Their Friends Get Rich Off Insider Stock Tips, Land Deals, and Cronyism That Would Send the Rest of Us to Prison. Mr. Schweitzer, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be on with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I guess you know it's no secret that you have a lot of fans in the Tea Party.
Yes, I do, and I'm very grateful for that. Thank you.
Well, your latest book, Throw Them All Out, has tongues wagging all over America. I think until your book came out, most people didn't realize that members of Congress could get away with insider trading.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of the many rules that apply to us but don't apply to them, and it gives them a huge advantage, and it helps explain why so many of them come into office relatively poor and leave rich.
Like Al Gore, maybe?
Yeah, there's lots of examples from both sides of the aisle, and what's happened is government has become sort of a profit-making center, and I think that's a huge problem that we need to correct if we're going to tackle the larger issues and challenges that we face today.
When did you first stumble onto this little-known fact?
It was really a couple of years ago. Somebody sent me a study that looked at 6,000 stock trades by U.S. senators, and what they discovered is that, you know, while corporate executives beat the stock market average by 5% a year, and hedge funds beat it by 7-8% a year, hedge funds being the guys that make the really big bucks, senators actually beat the stock market by 12% a year. And I looked at that and thought, you know, there's only one or two possible explanations. One is that they're just a lot more brilliant than we thought they were, and we need to appreciate them more. The other one is that something else is going on, and it didn't take me too long to realize that, yes, indeed, something else is really going on.
I understand you've ruffled Mr. Kerry's feathers with this, and he's demanding a retraction, and you responded by saying, Mr. Kerry, no get.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the problem is that all I simply do is report the facts. You know, his involvement with healthcare reform, his aggressive purchasing of healthcare-related stocks, pharmaceutical stocks, medical device manufacturers, hospital firms and health insurance companies at the same time that he was working on this bill. So I told him, I can't retract facts. He may say that this is just coincidence, which he's entitled to say. He may say that it's no big deal. But I can't say that I'm going to retract it because I'm simply recording the facts, and he has not disputed the facts as I presented them in the book.
Now, one of the best measures of how effective an author who pens the types of books that you do, one of the best measures of your success is whether or not you affect change. And wow, by an amazing coincidence, the day your book came out, there was a bill introduced in the Senate to outlaw congressional insider trading. What a coincidence. Oh.
Yeah, suddenly there's a lot of interest and movement in this, and I think what it shows is that, you know, when they are put under the spotlight, they are willing to make changes because they want to keep their jobs.
Right.
I don't think the Stock Act is the best solution, but I think it's a movement in the right direction. But honestly, I think the mood is basically that, you know, look, this will blow over in a couple weeks, it's not going to be a big deal, and then we can go back to business as usual. And we just need to make sure that that's not the case.
I have given away a number of copies of one of your previous books, Do As I Say, Not As I Do, Profiles in Liberal Hypocrisy. The book you just released, Throw Them All Out, is one that I only got my hands on late last night, so I've only browsed through it. But I can tell you that as I did so, I got the same feeling I got when I read Do As I Say, Not As I Do, Profiles in Liberal Hypocrisy. And that feeling, Peter, was, why in the hell does it take this one guy to point all this out? Where's the mainstream media?
Well, that's a good question. I think part of it is the media in Washington, the people that cover Congress, for example. It's a little bit like covering the baseball team, you know, in your city. If you call the baseball players useless and the management corrupt, you're not going to get in the locker room. You're not going to get interviews. Your access is going to be cut off. And it's very similar here. I mean, they want high-profile interviews. They want leaks from political figures. And if they're indicting the whole system by running these kinds of stories, they're not going to get invited to the right parties, and they're not going to get the right leaks. So they've got to sort of stay true to the home team, as it were, in this case, which is the political class in Washington.
I would like to hear just a few examples, perhaps some of the more egregious examples of this insider trading leading to the enrichment of elected officials.
Well, it works in the stock market. It works in land deals. I'll give you a couple of examples. On the stock market, one of the things that they can and often do is accept IPO shares, initial public offerings of stock. This is what happened in the Pelosi case. And the easiest way to think about it is, if I come into your office as a senator and I give you $10,000 in cash in a shoebox and ask you for something in return, that's a bribe, and both of us are going to go to jail if we're caught. But if I come into your office and say, look, I'm going to give you access to initial public offering shares of stock, you're going to be able to buy them cheap and sell them for a whole lot more literally the next day, and you're going to make $100,000 out of the deal, that's completely legal, and that goes on all the time. And so in the case of Nancy Pelosi, she literally made more than $100,000 in one day because she had special access to Visa stock before it went public. They bought it at $44 a share. The next day it was trading at more than $66 a share. So that's one way it works. The other way it can work on the market is, you know, you have access to a briefing. Somebody with the Food and Drug Administration tells you that a drug is going to be approved or not approved. It's going to have a huge effect on the value of that company, and you buy or sell stock accordingly in that company. That goes on also, and it's completely legal. And then there's the angle that's not related to the stock market, which involves land deals, where, you know, literally you'll have somebody come in, buy some farmland, they'll put it in an earmark to have a highway built next to it, and then they'll turn around and sell it for more than double the price the following few months. And that's a way that they enrich themselves as well.
Well, speaking of Nancy Pelosi, it's my understanding that near some of her real estate, she has used her power to influence exactly how far away a public transportation is, and that having public transportation, mass transit, just the right distance away from residential property makes it very, very valuable, and she's been able to manipulate the system using her power. Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. And what it really is a situation where, the sweet spot for mass transit is right in that range of three blocks. And what they found is that in the case of a lot of these congressmen, they own commercial real estate that just happens to be three blocks from, you know, a light rail system or a subway system that is being built with federal money. So some people would say that's coincidence. I think there's a whole lot more to it than that.
If you don't mind me jumping to a previous book, you also wrote about Nancy Pelosi's investment, and I think it was a country club where the building of said club would endanger a particular type of turtle. Pelosi and her investors agreed to move the turtles to a different location before they built the club, and then once they got approval to build the club, they said to hell with the turtles. Is that not correct?
Yes, and, you know, this is, I think, kind of a reality that you have, is that people advocate all sorts of things that they want other people to comply with, but when it comes to their own investments or real estate or holdings, they don't feel like they should comply by the same rules. And in this particular case, there were environmental rules that had been set up, and she just was not really interested in following them. So the investment company where they are a stakeholder just ignored those regulations and tried to get away with it.
Wow. I don't know where all that liberal compassion went, but apparently it wasn't present then. Okay, I'm going to ask you to do something a little on the tough side, but a lot of my Tea Partiers are a little confused right now about exactly which candidate they should vote for. I'm sure how much, crony capitalism has crept into the careers of these candidates will be important to them in making their decision. Evaluating the people up on the dais at the debates, who's the cleanest and who's the dirtiest?
That's a hard one to answer because, you haven't investigated all of them. Look, I think they all have good strengths. They all have, in some way or the other, benefited from their access to political power. I mean, I think the attraction, for example, to somebody like Romney is that, yes, he was governor of Massachusetts, but he has been in the private sector most of the time, so that's attractive to me. On the other hand, I'm not sure to stand on some of the issues are all that appealing. I have concerns there. I think somebody like Newt Gingrich is very articulate and I think recognizes sort of some of the systemic problems we face. But of course, Newt has been in public life for some 30 years now, and I think you can say the same thing about Rick Perry. So I think it's something we need to hash out, and we need to get them to commit to certain reforms during the midst of these debates before we say which one we're going to commit to the other. And I honestly think cleaning up corruption in Washington and changing the system is vitally important in that that's the only way we're going to tackle these larger issues. This is not isolated from, the debt and the federal budget and the other issues that we're facing. I think it's very much related to it because they are very comfortable right now in Washington. Life is good. The average congressman saw their net worth go up 25% over the last 2 years. How many of us can say that? And so as long as they are, isolated from the realities that the rest of us face because they have their own set of rules, we're not going to get a lot of movement on these issues.
I want to ask you about Warren Buffett because I think a lot of people have seen him on television saying rich people need to have their taxes raised, and they're thinking, what a kind, benevolent, old guy, compassionate, even though he's going to be that 1% paying the higher taxes, he's willing to do it. What an American, what a patriot. But there's really more to that story, isn't there?
Yes, there is. I mean, he's one of several financiers that I talk about in the book who have this habit that I think poses massive conflict of interest, and if it involved advising a company, they would probably face some legal jeopardy. But because it involves the government, they're free to do it. And so in Buffett's case, in early 2009, he was a heavy advisor to the Obama administration, the White House, and the Treasury Department in structuring the bailout of the banks. There was something called the public-private partnership that the Treasury Department announced in late March of 2009. And that was really Buffett's plan. He designed it. He came up with the idea for it. He helped to structure it, which is all wonderful and great. And you think, well, this is altruism. This guy's just trying to help his country. The problem is while he was doing that and advising it, he was buying millions of shares of stocks in banks, the very banks that would end up getting bailed out under his plan. So he was able to buy stocks on the cheap, knowing what the bailout plan was going to look like, how they were going to benefit, and that gave him a huge advantage and helped make him a lot of money.
Wow, so he probably likes higher taxes because that means the government has more money to bail out companies that he either has an interest in or is planning to buy an interest in.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people tell me I don't understand why these guys, they don't want their taxes to go up. And what I tell them is, look, that's a minor thing for them. Their access to information, their access to government loans and government grants is far more profitable than anything that they would pay in additional taxes. So they're willing to have the trade-off. They can make trades that are going to net them, hundreds of millions of dollars based on their access to what government policy is going to be, and that's going to, overshadow any increase in taxes that they're likely to pay. So that's a trade-off they're willing to make.
There's a clip that I like to play for my guest. I find it very interesting. It's a quote from Barack Obama addressing the SEIU in Ohio. And since you mentioned the stimulus package in your book, I'd like you to hear President Obama's account of the stimulus package, what it was made up of, and essentially how well it's working, and then we'll address how you dealt with it in your book.
Okay.
An unprecedented recovery act, and we did it without the usual Washington earmarks and pork barrel spending. And Ohio, it is working.
We did it without the usual earmarks, which I guess is true, and pork barrel spending, and Ohio, it is working. Any pork in that stimulus package, Mr. Schweitzer?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, it's not only just pork. It was really the transfer of wealth from American taxpayers to very wealthy financiers that helped finance the Obama campaign in 2008. This is very clear in the alternative energy program that the Department of Energy ran. In that particular case, people are familiar with Solyndra, the solar company where the Obama financier or bundler was the lead investor. But Solyndra is just the tip of the iceberg. You can look through who got the loans and grants, and you find that out of $20 billion passed out, at least $16 billion of it went to companies where an Obama financier was the lead investor. So this is literally putting money in the pockets of people who put money in your pocket when you were running for office. And so it's pretty clear based on that the green energy stimulus was not about alternative energy. It was not about creating jobs. It was not about science and engineering. It was about payback, financial payback. And indeed, two of the people that helped run those programs were actually fundraisers from that 2008 campaign that were put in positions as quote-unquote strategic advisors to make sure the money got to the right place.
Was one of those companies Sirius Materials?
Yeah, one of those was this, yes. There's another one called Bright Source, which received a $1.4 billion loan guarantee, so that's more than double Solyndra's. In that case, one of the partners that owned the largest equity stake was Robert Kennedy Jr., who was a supporter, who was considered a choice to be the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. And actually, one of the principals at his firm went to work at the Department of Energy helping determine who was going to get grants and loans.
I don't really generally like comparisons between the Tea Party and the Occupy Wall Street movement, but it does seem that both groups have latched on to one key issue, and that's one covered in your book, and that's the type of cronyism that goes on. I mean, both groups were against the Wall Street bailouts. Both groups don't like the secrecy of the Federal Reserve. And like you said, this is going on both sides of the political aisle, and it seems like that the groups that are the most energized right now, the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street, or the Occupy movement, both are furious and being energized by this issue of crony capitalism, you know, and this concept of businesses being too big to fail. And I think everyone really agrees on one thing, despite our many differences, particularly with regard to social issues. But everyone on both sides agrees that the relationship between big government and big business is very corrupt, and the guys getting screwed are the little guys that actually go out and, you know, try to work every day and try to figure out a way to eat.
Oh, yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. There is a convergence there of anger, and I think the anger is justified. And the anger is justified because, you know, what we have is a situation with the American economy right now where basically you have socialism for the very rich. They get the crony deals. They get the insider deals. They have the influence. They get the government support for their ventures, et cetera. And then you have socialism for the very poor in the form of, you know, social programs. And then the middle class is left with free market capitalism. And I certainly think we ought to have, you know, a safety net for people who, for one reason or another, are going through a difficult time for a certain period of time. But I think there's no justification whatsoever for socialism for the very rich. No matter how wonderful they may think that, you know, their vision for a company or a technology is, you know, wind power, whatever, we should not be in the business of taking money from American taxpayers and literally giving billion-dollar checks to these investors. If they feel that it is going to work and it's going to work well, they ought to put their own money into it, or they ought to go raise it from their friends. But that's not what's going on, and they are literally being enriched at our expense.
It kind of reminds me of a joke I saw in Mad Magazine when I was a kid. They said, you know it's summertime whenever you're neither rich enough or poor enough to get to go to camp.
That's right. I mean, that's right. And that's really the way that it operates, in business.
It certainly seems that way. Now, I'm gonna make a strong recommendation here, and if I go over the top, forgive me, but I'm going to do it anyway. What people need to do is to go ahead and go out and get the 4-book set, Architects of Ruin, Do As I Say, Not As I Do, Profiles in Liberal Hypocrisy, The Makers and the Takers, also a very good book, and your most recent book, Throw Them All Out, and take that 4-book set and put it in the stocking of someone that you know is a conservative, someone you know who believes in fiscal responsibility, and I can promise you they will be talking about the gift you gave them for Christmas for a long, long time. Peter, why don't you tell the folks at home where they can get a hold of copies of your most recent book, and for that matter, all your books?
Well, you should be able to get any of them on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and the most recent books available in bookstores everywhere. Throw Them All Out, it came out just a week ago, and that's the most recent one, and perhaps the one that'll be of most interest.
Well, I can tell you that I walked right past it. I picked up a copy at Barnes & Noble last night and went to the political section, and it wasn't there. And I asked why, and they said because we've got them all out on the front table. So if they're following the same planogram at all the Barnes & Nobles, which oftentimes they do, all you have to do is walk in the front door to one of the front tables, and you're going to see a whole bunch of these bright – would you call it – what color would you call that? Is it an off-red? What would you –
Yeah, it's like a bright orange almost, which I didn't think was going to work, but I think they did a great job on it, actually.
Absolutely. So look for the bright orange book with a picture of the Capitol building upside down. That'll be your clue that you're in the right area. Also, if they want to check out your work, you are indeed the editor of BigPeace.com, and you have your own website, PeterSchweitzer.com, spelled just like it sounds.
That's exactly right, and we'd love to hear from people. They can contact me through those websites or make comments, and I'll look forward to any thoughts or questions people might have.
Fantastic. You know, one of the things that we do here from time to time on the Tea Party Power Hour is we will get with four or five tea parties from around the country and ask each one of them to gather, you know, five or so members that have read a particular book, and then we bring the author back on, and you actually get to field very intelligent questions from people who've read your book. If you'd be interested in that, we'd love to have you back sometime for a Tea Party book party.
Oh, I'd love to do that. That sounds great. Yes, count me in.
Fantastic. Well, I know you're on your way right now to your Thanksgiving celebration, so thank you for spending time with us, especially at this holiday time of year. I've enjoyed your visit very much. I've made it no secret to your publicist. I've been a Peter Schweitzer fan for a long time, and as I told you off-air earlier, I took materials from your book, Do As I Say, Not As I Do, and I pursued Michael Moore relentlessly one night on Twitter. It was about the time he was showing up trying to cause problems for Scott Walker, you know, trying to say he was a supporter of the working man, a supporter of unions, and he was tweeting about all this stuff. And I was firing back with, is it true you don't hire a lot of black people to work on your films? Is it true that you had two of your writers that said they were going to join a union, and you said if they joined the union, you'd have to fire one of them? Is it true, Mr. Moore, that you do a lot of your filming and your post-production work outside the United States so you don't have to pay higher union wages? And I got all of that from your book, and I just dogged him until he finally decided to quit tweeting that night. So,
well, that's good for you. I'm sure you're not going to be on his Christmas list this year.
I probably will not, but that's okay. I don't think I was going to be on the list anyway, but it's amazing how just a little bit of research, a little bit of reading, taking the time to apprise yourself of the facts can allow you to, you know, kick Michael Moore's butt on Twitter if you so choose. And again, I did that 100% with information that was in your book. And I have to tell you, I've given several copies of that away. I've gotten really nice thank you notes for giving that away. And again, I'm talking about Do As I Say, Not As I Do. And it just makes a great Christmas gift, as I'm sure Throw Them All Out will as well. But you do, you know, I don't want to flatter you too much here on your first visit, but your books are very well researched. You're one hell of an investigative journalist, and just keep up the great work. We need more people like you out there, Mr. Schweitzer.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Bye-bye.
That is unfortunately all we have time for today. I want to remind everyone that our guest next week will be Brian Sack. He's the author of a brand new book called The BS of A, and he's also just started a brand new TV show on GBTV. That's Glenn Beck's new internet network, and the show is also called The BS of A. We look forward to visiting with Brian next week. In the meantime, I want to remind you that if you'd like to subscribe to our newsletter, simply send me an email at mark@teapartypowerhour.com. Put the word subscribe in the subject area. I'll know what you want, and you will be on the list for the Tea Party Telegram, which is our official newsletter. Also want to remind you to check out our website, teapartypowerhour.com, where you will find lots of products like solar-powered electrical generators, solar-powered ovens, survival seed banks, and water purification systems that can help your family in the event of an economic meltdown. Thanks for joining us today. We look forward to having you back next week.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.